This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump and Clinton run away from pleasantries. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Friday, October 21st. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Just one night after a nasty debate, the two candidates sat 3 feet apart at a charity event and took more shots at each other. Here are the one-liners they dropped.
Calling it the largest theft of government secrets ever, federal prosecutors plan to charge a former NSA contractor with espionage.
Good news, bad news in Chicago. Bad news, the Bears lost another quarterback and were beaten by the Packers. The good news, the Cubs are one win away from the World Series.
And new marketing approach from Walmart, rolling out their CEO to be in commercials.
Walmart has to get over still this image of being a place where you just get low-cost goods and you can get low-paying jobs. They've worked for years to sort of move past that image, and Doug McMillon, during his time as CEO, has raised store worker wages. He's done other things.
Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Nassauer on Walmart chief executive Doug McMillon's newest responsibility, burnishing the company's image. Her report in about 20 minutes. One day after their tense final debate, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton attended the same charity event, with only the Catholic Archbishop of New York sitting between them. The Alfred E. Smith Gala, with a tradition of bringing levity to the final stages of presidential campaigns, last night turned into an exchange of zingers during speeches by Mr. Trump and Mrs. Clinton.
Hillary accidentally bumped into me, and she very civilly said, "Pardon me."
Of course, he said, "After I become president." The dinner was a white tie fundraiser at the Waldorf Astoria for Catholic Charities. That's a must-do stop for presidential candidates, which involves self-deprecating humor.
And as you've already heard, it's a treat for all of you, too, because usually I charge a lot for speeches like this.
The two sat separated by Cardinal Timothy Dolan. And although the candidates shook hands before the event was over, the tension throughout was so high that Cardinal Dolan said at the end of the event that he had cold symptoms because he'd been sitting in, quote, the iciest place on the planet. Well, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump is trying to explain his suggestion at the last debate that he might not accept Election Day results if he loses. He told a rally in Ohio that he was simply affirming the ability of candidates to question an election outcome.
Of course, I would accept a clear election result, but I would also reserve my right to contest or file a legal challenge in the case of a questionable result.
He also worked in a joke about the controversy that he stirred.
I will totally accept the results of this great and historic presidential election if I win.
Still, Mr. Trump continued his complaint about the names of dead people on voter rolls and repeated his accusation that non-citizens are voting illegally, a charge that is unsubstantiated. Mr. Trump's words at the debate and yesterday on the campaign trail support his assertion that the election is rigged against him. That's what he said in the GOP primaries when he lost a state and when he was outmaneuvered by rival Ted Cruz in the process of collecting delegates. Well, Mr. Trump, as you know, frequently describes America's inner cities as a disaster, especially for blacks and Latinos, and he's not entirely wrong. But Wall Street Journal economics reporter Eric Morath said he's not entirely correct either. Eric, explain.
Donald Trump likes to talk about how inner cities are really struggling in America, and he talks specifically about how blacks and Latinos in those cities are struggling, and he's using this as part of his appeal that both the Obama administration has failed to deliver economic progress to those areas, and to his, he's pretty blatant about his appeal to minority voters, saying that he can do better by them than his opponent, Hillary Clinton. But what we found was that it's perhaps overstating how dire the situation is in inner cities. And this is, if you look at large cities in the United States, you know, there have been employment gains, there has been lower unemployment. But where Donald Trump perhaps is onto something is when you look at the poverty rate, it's much, much higher in some cities for blacks and to some degree Latinos than it is for whites.
All right. Did you also point out, too, with regards to his definition of inner city, we're not quite sure what he means?
Yeah, so that's part of what makes it difficult to put your finger on this. So, you know, what does he mean by inner city? He hasn't defined it. We asked this campaign. They didn't reach out to us on this one. But, you know, so does that mean a large city? Or does that mean large cities in large metro areas? Or even some people might say, well, it's the central neighborhood, the downtown, or even the predominantly minority neighborhoods within a city. So what we took at it was we looked at, based on where he's talked about places like Chicago, Detroit, Philadelphia, Washington, those cities are all ones he's mentioned, and those would be the category of the largest city within the largest metro areas. You know, there's other places like Austin, Texas, and Jacksonville, Florida, which are now, in fact, very large cities, but almost all the population in those metro areas is within that city. It's not really a place like, you know, Philadelphia or Detroit where you have, you know, 3, 4, or 5 million people living in the area around the city, and then the core city is what we're looking at in terms of these poverty and unemployment data.
Right. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal economics reporter Eric Marath. His piece is called What Donald Trump Gets Right and Wrong About America's Inner Cities. Would he be safer just to focus on poverty? Because that number seems to be the one that jumps out, because the city stuff in terms of employment or unemployment seems like it's a little more erratic or inconsistent.
You know, if you look at poverty rates by race across the country, you're going to see a pretty wide disparity. The rate is significantly higher for blacks and higher for Latinos than it is for whites. And, you know, that can be, you know, especially pronounced in some cities. But I think also when you do think about the unemployment rate, it's not entirely wrong there. You know, look at a place like Chicago. The unemployment rate broadly last year was 9.5%, so a bit elevated over the national average. But for, you know, whites, it was just 4%. But for blacks, almost 19%. So, I mean, that's a pretty huge disparity. And, of course, you know, I mean, there's got to be a high correlation between having a job and not living in poverty. So there's certain places that he can rightfully point out that the lot is different for blacks than it is for whites.
Thanks, Eric. Wall Street Journal economics reporter Eric Marath. It's 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Everyone knows that business is all about numbers. Consider the numbers the state of Michigan can offer your business, like Michigan being one of America's top 10 states for business. Or 2000, the number of burdensome regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6, Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climates, which all adds up to the one state that has all that and more, Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte is working hard to distance himself from the U.S. He announced a separation from Washington in a speech before an economic forum in Beijing yesterday. This is the same guy who called the U.S. ambassador, quote, the gay son of a whore, and referred to President Obama as a son of a, well, you know. Meanwhile, U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby said Duterte's remarks were inexplicably at odds with the very close relationship we have with the Filipino people.
We remain rock solid in our commitment in the mutual defense treaty that we have with the Philippines. That hasn't changed.
He got the ball rolling here on Wednesday, did Mr. Duterte, when he further distanced his country from the U.S., saying, I will not go to America anymore. We will just be insulted there. He is also promising to align his country with Russia as well as China. His war on drugs in the Philippines, by the way, has led to the deaths of about 2,400 people in his 2 months in office. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, at a New York Catholic charity dinner in which the presidential candidates usually poke fun at each other, hard jabs were thrown instead. While most of the jokes were relatively mild put-downs, others were stinging. Donald Trump drew boos at the Al Smith dinner when he called rival Hillary Clinton corrupt. He also referred to hacked emails and suggested that Clinton was pretending not to hate Catholics.
You didn't send her invitation by email. Or maybe you did. And she just found out about it through the wonder of WikiLeaks.
Clinton took a few shots as well.
Because this is a friendly dinner for such a great cause, Donald, if at any time you don't like what I'm saying, feel free to stand up and shout wrong while I'm talking.
Only one person sat between the candidates. New York's Cardinal Timothy Dolan says his position between the two presidential nominees was the iciest place on the planet. Elite Iraqi special forces have joined the battle to retake the city of Mosul, an Islamic State stronghold. Iraqi Kurds are also involved, along with airstrikes from the U.S.-led coalition. The Pentagon says there's been an American combat death, the first since the operation began. Josh Brown's future with the Giants and possibly the NFL is in jeopardy after police released journal entries and emails in which the place kicker admitted that he verbally repeatedly abused his former wife. And the league reacted yesterday by reopening its investigation in the 2015 domestic abuse complaint. The Giants announced before traveling to London that Brown wouldn't make the trip for a game Sunday against the Rams. Just one more victory, and for the first time since 1945, the Cubs will be in the World Series. The Cubs knocked off the Dodgers 8-4 last night to take a 3-2 lead in the NLCS. Game 6 set for tomorrow night at Wrigley. And here comes some of that Prince music we'd been hearing about. Warner Brothers Records says a new greatest hits album and a deluxe edition of Purple Rain will feature unreleased songs from Prince's vault. One song called Moonbeam Levels was recorded for the album in 1999, but was not included on the final LP.
Wow. All right, I'm intrigued.
It sounds like there's thousands of songs,
too. Because that album was great.
Oh, yeah.
I think 1999, I was just looking it up, came out in 1982. So, and almost 34 years to the day that album came out.
Wow.
Delirious, Little Red Corvette. That was a good album. Hopefully the song follows suit. Thank you, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Make Michigan your number one choice for business. You'd imagine that the CEO of Walmart has a lot on its plate running the world's largest retailer, but recently Chief Executive Doug McMillon has been given another responsibility, and that's improving the company's image. Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Nassauer says more CEOs are raising their public profiles, speaking out on issues, and appearing in ad campaigns, but it remains an unusual move for Walmart. Sarah, what's up here?
Doug McMillon, he's been on the job for a little over 2 years now, running Walmart, and he's just sort of taking a different tack than the previous CEOs that came after Sam Walton, the company's founder. He's been more public. He's been more intentional. He's posting regularly to his Instagram and Facebook accounts. He's reaching out to store employees and customers directly on those accounts. And he's also starring in a TV commercial, and that's the first time a Walmart CEO has gone on a video ad as sort of spokesman, pitchman.
I hope people will like the opportunities we're creating at Walmart, but I'm not keeping score. Well, maybe just a little. I'm Doug. Here at Walmart, we're committed to taking care of the people who take care of you.
Interesting. So why now?
I think that, we're at a different point where we expect to know everything about everyone because of social media. So the idea that a CEO of the world's largest company, we wouldn't know anything about them makes less sense to people. At the same time, Walmart has to get over still this image of being a place where you just get low-cost goods and you can get jobs, low-paying jobs. So they've worked for years to sort of move past that image. And Doug McMillon, during his time as CEO, has raised store worker wages. He's done other things that are focused on making the job better, or that's their aim. And so I think the company is now capitalizing on that with some marketing.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal retail reporter Sarah Nassauer. Her piece is called Walmart CEO Doug McMillon's ad was designed to burnish retailers' image. All right, so you mentioned before he's been fairly active on social media here, Mr. McMillon. Is that because he's 50 and seems to be in tune, or is this part of the strategy?
It's part of the strategy, and this ad came out of the public affairs office of the company, not so much marketing, which is interesting to me because it means that this is about reputation. It's not about getting you into the store to buy a hot new holiday toy. And it ran on Facebook, Instagram, and then on TV over the summer. And the company said that the targets for this ad were not just shoppers, but also employees, you know, public policy officials who care about workers' issues. They want those folks to know that the CEO is standing up, you know, with his own image and his own name and sort of standing behind this investment. Some of the research I looked at, though, that sort of tracks the effectiveness of video ads showed that people really, when they saw this, they kind of fell into whatever they thought about Walmart before, that's what they've thought about Walmart after seeing this ad. If you think Walmart is a horrible employer and you don't want to ever shop there, this ad didn't change your mind.
What about future ads, since he's done it once? I mean, I guess the door's open, right?
He's not going to be the spokesman for the company, the company says. They said this ad did well, you know, that they found that it did do well amongst policy leaders and that employees liked it, and it did boost his image.
Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Nassauer, 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Whether traveling or working remotely, we know your PC is your business headquarters. And when work takes you on the go, you need a laptop that can keep up. Dell's XPS 13 empowers small business owners to collaborate anywhere with incredible battery life and powerful performance. Reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times faster performance when you refresh to new Dell PCs featuring Intel Core processors. Explore the XPS 13 at Dell.com/radio.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Hey, glad you're with us on this Friday, October 21. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Trump and Clinton trade barbs at a Catholic charities dinner. A former NSA contractor to be charged with espionage. American service member killed by an IED near Mosul, Iraq. The Academy of Pediatrics says no screen time for babies 18 months and younger. New species of dinosaur found called Titanosaur. With a win tomorrow, Cubs go to the World Series. Packers beat the Bears last night. A Spanish court reverses a ban on bullfighting. And the new Lady Gaga album is another shot at an image makeover. It drops today. Well, for most of Georgia's history, Democrats and Republicans knew where they stood. The state was solidly Democratic for nearly a century after the Civil War. But the partisan tides shifted after the 1964 Civil Rights Act, with the state becoming solidly Republican by the early 2000s. But Cooper Allen at USA Today says, nevertheless, with changing demographics and a controversial GOP nominee, Democrats see an opening in this year. Cooper, what have you found?
After the conventions, August specifically, you'll recall Donald Trump had a pretty rough month. And some polls in Georgia showed basically the race was dead even, which got Democrats there very excited that a state where they're hopeful they're going to break through in the next few years as demographics continue to change there. But that raised the prospect that maybe 2016 could be the year where they actually win the presidential race in Georgia, which hasn't happened in Georgia since 1992 when Bill Clinton narrowly with a plurality carried the state. But since then, the Republican nominee has won each year. So it's been kind of counted as a solid red state for some years now, but the polls after the convention showed a tightening race. So I was there late last month to kind of get a sense from both parties about the lay of the land and how they felt. And it won't surprise you to know that they had two very different views on the way things stood there.
I got a chuckle when I was reading it, too. It's funny because you quote Jason Carter, the grandson of Jimmy Carter, says, I think it's clearly a battleground state. Then you follow up with the guy from the Republican Party who says, we're not a battleground state. So
right. Yeah. Yeah. So Democrats, they see a very competitive race and the state increasingly becoming a competitive state in the years ahead. Republicans, meanwhile, you mentioned the one quote, they feel, you know, even with their controversial nominee, that the state is still theirs, and they have some reason for confidence. All the statewide offices in Georgia are controlled by Republicans. So it's still the establishment there is still Republican. Polls show Donald Trump with around a 5-point lead. So I would say Trump is still favored there, but Democrats are making a play there. They point to the fact that 4 years ago, Obama lost by around 7.5 points, which made it the second most competitive state that he lost. But that was with no investment from the Obama campaign. This year, the Clinton campaign is making more of an effort there. Frankly, it's not a state Hillary Clinton needs to win, obviously. Okay. I mean, her focus will be on the traditional battlegrounds, Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, in the final few weeks. But it's a state that, if it increasingly becomes competitive, both in 2016 and looking ahead to 2020, as one Republican state lawmaker I talked to down there put it, you know, if Georgia is a blue state, then America is basically a blue nation.
Mm. We're speaking with Cooper Allen, politics editor at USA Today, about his story entitled Georgia Democrats Hope State's Shift to Purple Comes Quickly. All right, so what are these changing demographics that you mentioned?
You know, the African-American population has always been significant in Georgia, but in 2000, it was around 28%. It's gone up to, you know, over around 31, 32%. Meanwhile, the Hispanic population has grown even faster. So Georgia, really, in the, you know, the projections kind of vary on exactly when this will happen, but it's expected in the years ahead that it will become a majority-minority state. So African-Americans overwhelmingly support Democrats. The Hispanic population tends to favor Democrats as well. We're seeing that especially so given Donald Trump's candidacy this year. So that's really the predicament facing Republicans. If the demographics in the state continue to change, their base has been overwhelmingly white voters. The most recent poll in Georgia showed Donald Trump favored by something like 72-73% of white voters in Georgia. So that's been enough in past years where the white percentage of the electorate is sufficiently high, where if Republicans do overwhelmingly well with whites, that's enough to win. But as the demographics continue to change, Republicans are really facing the challenge of changing the nature of their electorate.
Thanks, Cooper. Cooper Allen from USA Today. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. By the way, if you miss a day, don't forget you can hear podcasts of the program on our website, which is thismorningwithgordondeal.com. Also on apps like TuneIn, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes. Trips to the post office are never convenient, so why not get postage right from your desk with Stamps.com? Stamps.com even gives you special postage discounts you can't get at the post office, including ones for first class, priority mail, express, international, and more. You'll never pay full price for postage again. Stamps.com is easy to use, all from your own computer and printer. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package, then just hand your mail to the mailman or drop it in a mailbox. It's no wonder over 600,000 small businesses already are using Stamps.com. Right now, you can sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Get started with Stamps.com today. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal. Hey, glad you could spend some time with us on this Friday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, after losing his wedding band 2 months ago in a rushing river during an end-of-summer workouting, Matt Duyema never thought he'd see his sentimental gold band again. All that changed on Monday, however, when he received a Facebook message that he admittedly almost deleted. Matt tells ABC News that he packed up all of his other important stuff like keys, cell phone, and wallet before the rafting trip, but forgot to take off his ring because he never takes it off. Understandably, he thought he'd never see it again, but all that changed this week when he got a Facebook message from a woman who said that her family had been vacationing and found the ring. Apparently, her 8-year-old boy named Matthew spotted it while they were tubing.
Jeez.
At first, he thought it was a shiny rock, but when he found out it was a lost ring, he was adamant that they must find the owner, which they did through a Minnesota wedding registry using the couple's names and wedding date that were inscribed on the ring.
Wow.
The ring's owner and his wife are obviously thrilled, and as for Matthew, he said it's awesome.
How about that?
Yeah.
What a story. What an effort those people made to find him, too.
Oh, yeah. They really tracked. Apparently, the kid, like I said, he was adamant. He was like, look, this is somebody's, we need to do this, Mom. And you know what it's like when an 8-year-old kid gets their mind on something. Probably didn't leave her alone the whole time. Mom, we need to find the ring's owner.
This reminds me of my honeymoon.
Yeah.
Where we went to the Sandals Resort in St. Lucia.
Okay.
So most of us had wedding rings on for the very first time, right? So the day before we were married, right? We go. So playing volleyball in the pool and guys spiking the ball and their rings come flying off, right? Because the water's a little chilly, you know, so there's some shrinkage on your finger or whatever. Right. And so at times during the volleyball match, you could hear cling, 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 like as rings flew off fingers and then went rolling on the concrete outside the pool.
That's right. Those rings are a dicey proposition because most guys, they don't wear a lot of jewelry, right? And those rings, and you said your fingers, they swell up or they shrink, and we're just not used to having them. We're not used to caring for jewelry like that. So, they are always, it's always a scary thing. You always have to, every once in a while, I just out of habit, I check to make sure I still have it on my finger. Right.
That's why my ring was about $76 and my wife's wedding band. And was 800 times that amount. But you see what I've done? Do you see my ring finger on my left hand? It's been permanently damaged by jamming it when I caught a football one time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the ring can't come off.
Nice.
Because my finger's permanently bent.
What a lucky break for you.
There you go.
And a Virginia news anchor, Gordon, had a moment made for social media this week after a teleprompter typo led him to give a baffling instruction to the audience. Eric Phillips of WWBT-TV in Richmond was delivering a report Wednesday morning about a rice cooker recall when he arrived at the word pantries. But then this happened instead.
Check your panties. About 175,000 rice. I think that was supposed to be pantries.
I couldn't warn you before I saw it, and I couldn't warn you, Eric. I'm so sorry.
As you can hear, everyone had a good laugh about it, and the clip quickly went viral, as did an auto-tune clip that turned Phillips' gaffe into a little bit of a song.
Check your panties. Check your panties. Check your panties.
Hello, hello, hello to the internet.
Check your panties.
I couldn't warn you.
Check your panties.
The original clip posted by the station has already been viewed nearly 400,000 times.
Is that
this
right?
is since Wednesday morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Small TV station in Virginia.
I believe that Eric Phillips is a Rutgers guy.
Oh, okay.
There's some Rutgers folks I think chiming in on that. The poor guy.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, people don't normally store things like rice cookers in their panties.
I mean, you never know. We've heard stranger things on this program, as we're well aware. So who knows? Maybe there was somebody that was a public service for somebody.
I thought one of the best lines, though, I think was maybe the weather guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who came behind them in that and said, hello, internet.
Right.
Just knowing that was going viral. That was a great call by him.
Yeah, they know at this point. The TV folks know when they're going to go online.
Sort of hello, YouTube. Some of them say 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the Justice Department says a former NSA contractor amassed at least 500 million pages of government records, including top secret information about military operations, by stealing documents bit by bit over two decades. Prosecutors in August arrested and charged Harold Martin with theft of government property and unauthorized removal of classified documents. But as details come to light, Martin will likely face additional charges, including violating the Espionage Act, an offense that carries much stiffer penalties than the current charges. Donald Trump is stepping back only slightly from his refusal to say during Wednesday night's presidential debate whether he would concede if he loses on Election Day. Trump now says he'll accept the results if he wins.
Of course, I would accept a clear election result, but I would also reserve my right to contest or file a legal challenge in the case of a questionable result.
Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine criticized Trump's comments.
Well, obviously, Donald, that is not accepting results. You got to accept the results of this election, win or lose.
Criticism is also coming from Republicans. Tennessee Senator Bob Corker, whom Trump briefly considered to be his running mate, said on Twitter that it is imperative that Donald Trump clearly state that he will accept the results of the election when complete. Once again, the issue of domestic violence has become a big story in the NFL. The league now says it will reopen its investigation into Giants place kicker Josh Brown after police released journal entries and emails in which Brown admitted that he repeatedly physically and verbally abused his ex-wife. And Brown was suspended for a single game for violating the league's personal conduct policy. You know, the holidays are around the corner when Neiman Marcus comes out with its annual Off the Charts Quirky Gift Giving Guide. This year's edition includes a curated collection of first edition children's books spanning 80 years for $100,000 and a $25,000 mattress with a built-in lockbox. For $65,000, you can buy a day-long training session for four people with quarterback Joe Montana. At least at these prices, it's good to know that some of the money goes to the Neiman Marcus Charity Foundation.
$65,000 for Joe Montana.
You think he works out hard anymore?
Day-long training session.
Yeah.
One day.
Four people.
Oh, man. Holy cow.
Yeah.
6 minutes now in front of the hour. Need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix.com has something for you. Used by more than 84 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from, and the drag-and-drop editor, there is no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com to create your own website today. The result is stunning. Hey, glad you're with us. So wrapping things up, a Texas police officer is being recognized for going out of his way to help save a three-year-old boy's life. Police in Granbury, southwest of Dallas, say Officer Chase Miller was scanning his radio's EMS channel when he heard a dispatcher call for paramedics to respond to a call about a toddler who had stopped breathing. Police say Mr. Miller realized he was near the location and immediately responded. Video from his dash cam shows him performing CPR on the boy until he resumed breathing. The boy's parents told the officer he had suffered a fever-induced seizure. He was later taken to the hospital. The boy's mom says she panicked even though she's certified in CPR. Officer Miller given the city's life-saving award and was joined at the ceremony by the boy and his family. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Thanks for listening, and we'd love to hear from you. Leave a review and comment for us on iTunes. For more from This Morning Show, check us out at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.